When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. First, you probably know the bad news already. Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. There's a better alternative. Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. As a finance nerd, you would assume that I have my money game all together. Well, shocker, I didn't. Until Monarch Money. Monarch Money allowed me to easily see what is going on with my finances, help me get a better handle on my spending, budgets, and more. It's my go-to app every day, more so than my bank, because I can quickly see where I am with my budgets and spending, allowing me to invest more and spend time on things I want to do. It's my GPS for money. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now you get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all your tags and categories. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving the product. They release updates every 2 weeks and allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. In fact, Monarch Money is one of the first to bring you direct Apple Card, Apple Cash, and savings syncing with the latest iOS 17.4 update. Now you can sync your wallet directly for seamless budgeting. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's a top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. That's monarchmoney.com/beginners for your extended 30-day free trial.
Love this podcast because it crushes your dreams of getting rich quick.
They actually got me into reading stats for anything.
You're tuned in to the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Led by Andrew Sather and Dave Ahern.
Step-by-step premium investing guidance for beginners.
Your path to financial freedom starts now.
Starts now.
All right, folks, welcome to Investing for Beginners podcast. Today, we are going to talk about back to basics. So this is a continuing series that we're going to release once a week as part of our duopoly shows that go out every week. And we're going to talk about a variety of different things. But today, we're going to talk about standing on the shoulders of giants. We're going to talk about super investors and how they can help you become a stock picker yourself. So the three that we're going to focus the most on today are going to be our biggies, Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, and Peter Lynch. And so with that, why don't we go ahead and start talking about maybe how you can look at super investors and how can they help an individual investor like us or a newbie? How can they help you get inspired to start?
It's a great idea. I mean, it sounds really simple, but it can be profound. The thing about stock market and investing and money is people can be really convincing when they're talking about it. But there's something to be said about having a track record that's public that people can look and verify that you know what you're talking about. Because again, it's like an armpit, you know, opinions about the stock market. Everybody has one, but not all opinions are equal. And so, especially as a beginner, looking at somebody like Warren Buffett, who's been the best investor over the last 70 plus years, Charlie Munger, who's been his right-hand man and guided him all along the way, and Peter Lynch, one of the big rising stars that had one of the best public track records ever in a short time period. All three of those guys are super generous with their knowledge. have the heart of a teacher and really want to help, and they have the reputation and the track record to back all of those things up that make it worth checking out and taking those lessons for yourself. Mm-hmm. So I guess for you, when you think of some of the best lessons that these investors have taught you, what are the first couple of things that spring to mind?
Oh boy, there's so many. There's so many. I think before I kind of dive into that, as a musician in a former life, it was standard practice to study the giants that came before you as a way to build your foundation before you started, you know, expressing your air quote own voice. And so playing guitar, that meant that you were not obligated, but it was highly encouraged to listen to the greats that came before you, the Jimi Hendrixes, the B.B. Kings, the Eric Claptons, the Stevie Ray Vaughans, younger generations, Eddie Van Halen, Joe Satriani, Steve Vai, just on and on and on. Dwayne Allman. I mean, there's just so many. Eric Johnson. I could go on for hours about all these people, but that's how you learned how to kind of build your knowledge base. And the same rule applies for piano players, for vocalists, for saxophone players, bass players, drummers, you name it. And so it's very natural in the music industry for this kind of idea to be very prevalent and natural. And most people don't even think anything of it. But for whatever reason in investing, sometimes it feels like it's a solo sport and you got to do it all by yourself and you got to figure everything out all by yourself. And you know, one of our other heroes, Monish Babrai, talks about is, why do all the hard work? Why do all that heavy lifting when you can look to people like Warren and Charlie, for example, to help give you great examples to kind of lift you up? So some of the things that I learned early on from Buffett was things like, you don't have to swing at every pitch. You don't have to buy every single company. And it's okay to miss on NVIDIA. It's okay. It's perfectly fine. And you can still have fantastic returns without investing in NVIDIA. Can you do the same thing with Berkshire Hathaway? Maybe, maybe not. But I'm joking, of course. But I think that was the biggest thing to me, was that I didn't have the pressure of like, I have to do everything else everybody else is doing. You don't have to buy everything else everybody else is buying. And that was like one of the first big early lessons for me. What about you?
That's a huge one. I like that one a lot. I think one of the big ones for me was this idea that stock prices follow business results. And more specifically, Peter Lynch laid it out in saying that if you looked at a chart of a company's EPS, earnings per share, compare it to its stock price, and you zoom out and look over a long time period, it's almost identical. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Munger, was it Munger or Buffett, had a similar quote saying, if you have a company that's earning 6% on its capital over a very long term, you're going to have an investment that earns about 6% on its capital.
Right.
So a lot of different ways to say the very same thing. But such a profound wisdom there, because to your point, everybody wants to talk about NVIDIA or whatever the flavor of the month is and how you have to be in it and how it's doing this, changing the world like that. Like if you're not in it, you're behind, blah, 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 blah. And you get all of this attention around whatever stock pick has done the best in the past year, 2 years, 3 years, when really the power in the stock market, the power of compounding, is over decades long. And having businesses that maybe they grow 10% a year and then their stock price grows 10% a year. Maybe they grow 15% a year and their stock price grows 15% a year. Those are the kind of stories that are on such a long timeline that they never make the press until you're looking back at a career or something like that. So to be able to, again, take away the mindset from being so short-term focused and stock market focused to being really business focused is such a breakthrough and really can change the way that you view how you're doing yourself, how your portfolio is doing, and also what kind of opportunities are out there now and in the future. And it's simple, but kind of contrarian in a way.
Yeah, it really is. One of the lessons that I learned early on from Warren was this idea of competitive advantages or moats. Yeah. And to me, that was, along with not having to swing at a pitch and along with understanding the business really impacts the returns that you get. The idea that you can have a company that is the reason why this company outperforms the other one, it's not just because it's more popular. It's because their products and their services are either that much better or sticky or, you know, addictive or however you want to, you know, label it. And that's what makes those companies so successful. It's not the slick marketing and it's not the, you know, the cool people advertising for it or representing it. It's the awesome business that's underneath that shiny ticker that you see scrolling across your screen. Once you understand that, once I understood that, hey, this is something that can set me apart from other investors, is understanding these things about these particular companies and trying to identify them. It's something I learned early on, and it's been an ongoing, you know, search for the last 7, 8, 9 years, is to try to find those kinds of companies. And that's what I spend probably the majority of my time thinking about, is does this company have a moat? What is it? And, you know, for those who are not familiar with this kind of idea, a moat is really a competitive advantage around a company. Warren, I think, described it really vividly when he said, I want a castle with a deep moat, a wide trench of water around the castle full of piranhas, alligators, and sharks. And he said, that's what, to me, a moat is. And I think that illustrates it perfectly. And that was a huge, huge lesson for me that I learned from him.
So what's an example of a moat that's easy for a beginner to understand?
There's probably a few that probably jump out. I think probably the first one I would think about would be the idea of a brand giving a company a competitive advantage, because it becomes a name. And when you think of a product or a service, Google, you know, we Google things, and you'd say it's a verb. And when you say, I Google something, everybody knows what you're talking about. You went to the website, you clicked in search, and you look for something. You know, YouTube, everybody knows what YouTube is. Netflix, everybody knows what Netflix is. Starbucks, everybody knows what Starbucks is. Nike, Coca-Cola, Apple, Amazon, all these companies, besides their operational business excellence, they have a brand. And it's not something you can necessarily quantify on a financial statement, but it certainly gives them strong presence in a market. And whenever you come across something like that, it makes it a stronger business. I mean, you know, Bing is Microsoft's competitor. You know, I'm a big fan of Microsoft, but I don't use Bing. I use Google. It's better. And that's why people use it. And to me, that's, I guess, an easy way to visualize a part of a moat. There's lots of components of it.
Do you have a long-term mindset searching for safe compounders? So am I. And I'm investing my entire life savings with the picks from ValueSpotlight.com.
Let's face it, a vibrant sex life contributes significantly to your overall happiness and confidence. But sometimes your hectic schedule doesn't leave room for doctor visits. That's where Hims steps in. With their convenient and discreet online platform, you can receive treatment for erectile dysfunction from the comfort and privacy of your own home. No more waiting rooms, no more awkward conversations, just a simple, direct path to treatment that works around your life, not interrupts it. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and 100% online. No uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance is needed. If ED is getting you down, it's time you join hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/investing. That's hims.com/investing for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/investing. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription needed. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, to kind of dive deeper into that a little bit, I think of Amazon's brand. They have that smiley face on their packaging. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember first seeing that on the box and I thought it was kind of cheesy then when they started doing that. But it was funny when my daughter had a package that she was expecting in the mail through Amazon and she sees that Amazon truck driving by as we were walking the dog. And, you know, just the joy she had and the extra hop in her step. And I told the Amazon driver, you know, you just made her day right there with this delivery. And that's kind of what you think of if you think of the Amazon brand and what it's able to convey, because it's so much more than just a store, even an online store. There are plenty, you know, countless online stores, but certain brands are able to go deeper than just that functionality that the business is doing. That I think there's only a few businesses that can do it well, but the ones that do definitely do have a moat, because you just can't replace the association of the convenience and the happiness you get from an Amazon package that arrives at your doorstep so quickly. You can't duplicate that super easily in the way that they have done. And you can say the same thing about a lot of the other brands you talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great example of how impactful the moat can be on a company. And as investors, that those are the kinds of companies you want to find, because they're going to have long-term growth or long-term success. Without getting into the nitty-gritty, they're going to have long-term success as a company. And those are the kinds of companies that will give you good returns for a long period of time. And that's, you know, you want to try to find those companies.
And to kind of go back to that track record idea, Buffett's built a big portion of his wealth with Coca-Cola and with Apple, and Charlie Munger with Costco. Mm-hmm. And you would say all three of those brands convey some sort of positive feeling with their customers and have had really strong moats because of the way they deliver on their brand promise. Yep. And it has shown with the way those stock prices have just been just wonderful, wonderful compounders.
Yeah, exactly. I created this interesting graphic that I saw this chart online the other day, and it was talking about the length of time that Warren Buffett has held some of his companies. And he's owned Coke for 34 years. He's owned American Express for 29 years. He's owned, I think it was Moody's, Visa, and Procter & Gamble for 22 years. Globe Life Insurance, nobody's ever heard of. He's owned that for like 25 years. And those are also, ironically, correspondingly, some of his larger positions too. Mm-hmm. And so that just goes to show the compounding that he's generated in his own portfolio by holding those companies that, you know, Coca-Cola and American Express, for example, are two of the strongest brands out there. You see those logos, you think, you talk about those companies, you say the words Coca-Cola or American Express, everybody knows what that is. And you don't need to explain, well, you know, Moody's is, you know, people don't know what that is unless you're like in the finance world. But Coca-Cola and Procter & Gamble and American Express, you know, right off the tongue, everybody knows who that is.
So asking the Midwest guy in the room, what part of the country is it that calls everything Coke?
That was when I lived in Tennessee, everybody called it Coke. Everything was a Coke.
Not a soda, not pop.
No, not a soda. When I lived in Wisconsin, everything was a soda. When I was in Iowa and Minnesota, everything was pop.
Okay.
So yeah, super.
So there's that brand power right there.
Right, yeah. But it was still Coke. So I guess we've talked a lot about Warren. What does Charlie bring to the table? What is his giant? What can we learn from him and standing on his shoulders?
Yeah. I mean, not to mention the fact that he was the one who talked about standing on the shoulders of giants in the first place. There's so much, like you said. And, you know, we obviously did the episode about Charlie Munger. If you haven't listened to that yet, go check it out in the archives. I felt that was all-encompassing, at least a better, broader overview of some of the best things that he has put into our investment philosophy. One of the bigger ones, I think, is this idea of finding a business that can, you know, paying a fair price for a good business versus paying a awesome price for a business that's mediocre. And, you know, I think that advice is going to be subjective for everybody. I think everybody's going to have a different temperament, a different goal to what you're trying to do. So if you go back to episode one of our Back to the Basics that we've just started, we talked about figuring out what you want. But for me, because I want to try to hold a business as long as I can and let them do the work, understanding you're going to have to probably put a little more trust in the business when you do that, it's not going to be a successful strategy to also buy mediocre businesses and do that as well. I think it was Warren Buffett had a quote saying, time is the friend of the wonderful business, mm-hmm. but the enemy of the mediocre business. Mm-hmm. And when I think of mediocre, I think of something that doesn't have a moat. And what happens when a company doesn't have a moat? Well, other people come in and they copy it and they do it better. And because you don't have any way to defend them, you don't have anything special about your business, your lunch gets stolen. And that happens all the time in capitalism. BlackBerry, Nokia.
Yeah.
The horse and buggy.
Yeah.
So, you know, with that in mind, if you focus your universe on businesses that are better, you don't have to do as much trading and worrying and jumping in and out of things. And it might take time to build a portfolio that really can stand the test of time, but that time is probably worth doing and well spent if that gets you closer to your goal, which is what I'm hoping to get to. And that's something I think without Charlie's influence, I don't know if that would have been such a obvious thing to go for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you?
I think the biggest, that was a big one. The other big one for me was this idea of, I feel like he was the father of behavioral finance. Like the idea of, you know, our temperament, our moods, the way we think and how we think about things so drastically impact our results in life that we a lot of times aren't even aware of that we're doing it. And I think he really laid a lot of groundwork for the behavioral finance that we have now. And just the ideas of thinking about the fear of missing out or confirmation biases. Those are two big ones. He has a lot of them. He has his lattice work of mental models. Those, all these ideas of how much investing is really behavioral versus understanding the numbers. You know, just our temperament and our patience or lack thereof can really impact our returns more than we know. One of my favorite Charlie sayings was, you know, never interrupt compounding unnecessarily. I'm paraphrasing, but
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, these ideas of how much our mental, you know, acuity and our behavior, emotional, you know, stress or status will impact our results is huge. And in investing, we always feel an urge to do something. And if you've learned nothing else from Warren and Charlie's investing career, they didn't do much. And it doesn't mean they weren't doing things, but they just weren't making a lot of activity in their portfolios. You don't own a company like Coca-Cola for 34 years if you're buying and selling a lot of stuff. And so that's really, when Charlie passed, he only owned four investments, you know, Costco, Wells Fargo, US Bank, and a fund that Li Lu managed from China. And that was it. And he held all those for many, many decades. And so you don't have to have activity for activity's sake. And that's something that I really learned from him, is a lot of the time the doing is actually sitting on your butt, not doing anything. And that is hugely impactful because it allows you to think instead of reacting. And, you know, in our day and age with the access to so much information and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of noise, it's real easy to get emotional about things. And that was, I think, the thing I took away from him kind of about the behavioral finance was that he was very unemotional. I'm not saying he didn't have feelings, but he was very unemotional. He didn't react to things positively or negatively. He was just kind of that ship sailing on the ocean. You know, even though the seas are could be very rough, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't rocking with the boat. And I think that's so powerful. And if new investors can just learn that kind of patience and steadfastness in the face of craziness, you're going to go a long, long ways.
What's the best way to get started in the market? Download Andrew's ebook for free at stockmarketpdf.com.
You really are. I mean, how many times did Costco look expensive? And
every day,
you know, and he admitted, like, I'm not going to buy more of it at the prices it was at, but he also did not sell it also because he understood the compounding that the business was doing is more important than what the stock market thinks about the company.
Right. Yep, exactly. He was a huge influence on Warren too. You know, Warren just released his latest shareholder letter, and he had this really touching moment in the beginning of the letter where he kind of talked about the impact that Charlie had on him and the business, and really gave Charlie a lot of praise for being really the architect for the Berkshire Hathaway that we know today. And I could see, I mean, you know, when he was talking about it, I could see that all happening just based on the interactions that you observed during the annual meetings that they had. You could definitely tell that he was a brilliant guy and he had a huge impact on Warren and the rest of the investing world. And, but he wasn't out front and he didn't take a lot of credit for it. So I think a lot of people didn't realize, or don't realize how big of an impact he's had on investing.
Yeah. And probably will for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So how can a beginner, speaking to a beginner in particular, when you feel like sometimes you're drinking from a fire hose and when there's so much to learn, how can a beginner start to have that kind of a mindset of patience and not being swayed emotionally and some of those things that can really help your investment performance?
As far as like outside factors, there's a few things you can do to try to help minimize some of that. Number one is try to limit your access to financial news, particularly a video news. So watching CNBC or watching, you know, any other Fox News or any of the other news programs that are on TV, their job is to draw eyeballs. And the way they can do that is by making things as you know, controversial or as exciting as they possibly can. And that's the exact opposite way you should invest. And so it's fine to watch it, but as long as you can detach yourself from the emotion, you know, if you're watching it for entertainment's sake, okay, fine. But if you're watching it to like get ideas to invest or inspiration or those kinds of things, I think I would be wary about taking too much stock into what somebody is saying in a 32-second blip on TV. I'm not saying that these people are doing dishonest things or trying to lead you astray, but you have to understand the incentives that they're all having is to be exciting, controversial, and draw eyeballs. And I guess the less you can avoid that, I think that's helpful. Kind of similar to written news. I don't feel like that's as bad, but it can be. Depending on what your source is that you're looking at, it can be very sensational. And you want to try to avoid that stuff. So if you can remove those things from your life, I think that could be helpful. Not having your Fidelity app, for example, or Robinhood app on your phone would be a really good speed bump. Again, if you're watching CNBC and you get super jazzed about, you know, some company and you really want to buy it without doing any sort of research, if you don't have it on your phone, it just makes it that much harder for you to do it and can slow you down and hopefully give you enough pause to go, do I really need to do this? And just by asking yourself that question, you can start to separate yourself. So those are a couple of things that I can think of. Do you have any suggestions?
I guess this is something that's kind of come out of it's a consequence of me having done the newsletter for so long. But I think there is some utility in this idea. Schedule a time every month where you're allowed to buy and sell stuff. And then the whole rest of the month, you're not allowed to touch your portfolio. I don't know how powerful that is because I guess that's not true. I've played with options and I've understood what it's like to have your window open 24/7. And that's way too much. And so, yeah, I think telling yourself, hey, I'm only allowed to buy on the first of the month or the first Monday of the month or the first business day of the month. And all the other time, if you want to sell something, you're forced to spend 29 days to think about it before you pull the trigger. Then the longer you can think about big decisions like that, the more logic can start to factor into that decision and the less that emotion can sway that decision. That could be another speed bump.
Yeah, that's a great one too. I think those three things could really help force yourself to slow down before you make decisions. I think that'd be very helpful.
I'll throw one more in there.
Okay.
Focus on content that is everlasting rather than content that is topical.
Yeah.
And so the things that are everlasting, principles, wisdom from guys who have invested for 70 years, those things have become principles and timeless for a reason, because they have worked. They have literally stood the test of time. That's the definition of timeless. And those are the things that will help you become an investor. Understanding what the economy is going to do in the next 2 weeks or 3 months does nothing to your skills as an investor. And all it does is create worry and emotion that hurts you and doesn't help you in any way.
Yep. I agree. What did Charlie say? Spend time with the imminent dead. And that's a great way to get ahead.
Yeah.
Because
that kind of rhymes too.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. I don't remember the numbers, but I was listening to Morgan Housel talk about his new book. And he was talking about like how many people have been on the earth, like, you know, that from the past versus today. And, you know, the percentage is quite staggering how many people aren't, you know, like it's, you know, today's population of the earth is like, I don't know, 2% of the whole population of humanity from time beginning to today. Oh, wow. And so to ignore all that history and only focus on the present is setting yourself up for failure, because even though technologically these people 1,000, 2,000 years ago, they weren't on our same level technologically, but intellectually they, you know, some brilliant people have, you know, lived, you know, during that time. And there's a lot you can learn from the past.
Are you a fan of biographies?
I love them. Big fan.
What's your sales pitch to somebody who hasn't like read more than 10 pages of a book before? Why should they consider a biography?
Well, I mean, to go back to Charlie, to paraphrase, he's never known anybody that wasn't smart or good at what they did without reading. And that's really the only path there is to get good at it. And the trick is to find something that you like that can keep your attention and just work away at it. I think it's Shane Parrish has talked about reading 20 or 25 pages a day. And if you do that, then you can read something like, if you set your mind to it over the course of 365 days, that can put you, you know, you can read the Bible. You can read, I think it was War and Peace. I think you can read Les Mis. These are all like 800 to 1,000 page books. And nothing that we're talking about is that long unless you read all of Warren Buffett's writings, which is 3,500 pages. That's a big chunk to chew off. But if you can find something that you think is interesting, I mean, you know, a biography of guys like Benjamin Franklin and Julius Caesar, or even, you know, more recent people, you know, FDR, Abraham Lincoln, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, you know, Walter Isaacson has written a lot of those books he's written. And he's a great writer, and he makes them very entertaining. You know, if you're struggling to read, Steve Jobs is somebody everybody knows. He had a very interesting life, and he was a very interesting character, to say the least. And I think reading 10 pages of a day about his life will fascinate you endlessly. So that's what I would do, is I would try to find something that appeals to you. You know, not everybody's going to like finance books, but I think biographies are about real life or history of the stock market or just history in general, I think is fascinating. And I think once you start picking it up and working through it, just 10 pages a day, that's like 15 minutes a day. And you know, everybody's got the time to do it.
Yes.
And you'll be shocked at what you can learn and how much you can get through just by consistently doing that little bit. Frankly, I've done that. I've been trying to read Shakespeare's works for many years, and I finally decided, all right, screw it. So last year I decided I'm reading 20 pages a day, and I'm going to read everything that Shakespeare's written. And I'll probably finish sometime this year, but you know, sometimes it's a grind, but you know, I'm still doing it because it's something I want to do. I think I can learn a lot from it.
I like to look for the shorter the book, the better, the bigger the text, the better. Yeah. I'm a big fan of audiobooks. And so if you're not great at reading on text, audiobooks is a great way to go.
Yep.
Put on an audiobook and go for a drive and see how much you absorb.
Yeah.
And I like the audiobooks that are shorter. Like if something's 10 hours or longer, I know I'm probably going to get bored halfway through, like almost right. Every time, almost like,
right.
Shakespeare would probably qualify under there. Sorry.
Right.
As you are.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, a memoir like Shoe Dog by Phil Knight.
Yeah.
Just awesome made a movie book. Out of it.
Awesome book.
Charles Schwab had something, I think he called Talk to Chuck or something.
Yeah. Yeah, really good.
I love the recent business people, especially in the stock market context, because those are businesses right now. You can go out and buy Nike right now.
Right.
And still feel that legacy.
Right. So
If you're like me and you kind of struggle through some of that stuff, make it easy for yourself.
Right. Exactly. You don't need to go read security analysis. That's just, that'll put everybody to sleep. But you know, two other books that I failed to mention, Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel is, you know, super easy book to read, and it's very well written, and he tells stories. He teaches you by telling you stories, and it just makes it really easy to read. And I think I probably read it in 2 or 3 days. And also our friend William Green's book, Richer, Wiser, Happier, is also extremely well written. Again, telling stories, you know, teaching you by telling you stories and anecdotes and everything. It just makes it really easy to read. And those would be fantastic books if you really want to start getting into reading and learning. Those are, you know, all the people that we've talked about today, from Warren to Charlie to Peter Lynch, all of them were avid, voracious readers. And if you can start to learn to develop that habit, it'll help you tenfold.
How long do you think it took you to develop that as you started in your investing journey?
I'm probably weird in that I already had that love of reading way before I got into investing. When I was a kid, I was the quintessential nerd. And I knew the 2 or 3 librarians in my local library by first name. And they would always help me pick out books. And I would take home 8 to 10 books every time I'd go to the library. And so I love to read, and I have ever since I was a little kid. So I'm probably not a good example. What about you?
I'd say it's come in like bits and spurts. So when I first started, I got really into it. And then sometimes it can kind of get boring or things get complex. So I think the advice you mentioned in the beginning of follow what interests you is really helpful when it comes to the reading thing. And then something I've talked about before on the show, Shane Parrish talks about, I think it was him, quit books that bore you. There's too many books out there. You can't read them all. So if a book's boring you and you're like dreading reading it, then pick up something else. And that action of having consistent reading habit, I think really helps you internalize. You know, Charlie Munger might say something brilliant, or Dave Ahern for that matter might say something brilliant, and I might not internalize it until I have to read it 3 more times somewhere else, right? And so the same thing as your beginner trying to learn how to be an investor, it's okay. That's the way we learn, is by getting things pounded into our head.
Right.
But you won't get there unless you have a reading habit.
Yep, exactly. All right. Well, with that, we will go ahead and wrap up our show today. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our Back to the Basics, talking about some of the giants, Warren Buffett, Charlie Munger, and Peter Lynch, and how you can stand on their shoulders and learn from them to start to become an investor. They can be very, very helpful. And with that, we'll go ahead and sign us off. You guys go out there and invest with a margin of safety, emphasis on the safety. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you all next week.
We hope you enjoyed this content. 7 Steps to Understanding the Stock Market shows you precisely how to break down the numbers in an engaging and readable way with real-life examples. Get access today at stockmarketpdf.com. Until next time, have a prosperous day.
The information contained is for general information and educational purposes only. It is not intended for a substitute for legal, commercial, and/or financial advice from a licensed professional. Review our full disclaimer at einvestingforbeginners.com.